Welcome back. Edward Lengel is with us. Bill Russell?
Before we get away from gas, we have been fairly cavalier, this country, the United States, in the last few years about the Geneva Conventions. And one of the reasons those conventions are in place are the kinds of atrocities that occurred during the First War, specifically gas. And the agreement among nations after that about various types of warfare, but gas right at the center of it. Everybody agreed that that was uncivilized and that even by war standards, that was unacceptable.
Chemical warfare was more or less banned.
And it seems to me that we, you know, ignoring these conventions, treating them as if they are just, you know, that's the old days and that was something that Europeans agreed to or whatever, is an extraordinary step backward and dangerous.
Right. If you, we can move ahead to the Second World War. The Second World War holds object lessons to how horrible and brutal warfare can become when those conventions are ignored. If you look at the Eastern Front in World War II or the Pacific War in World War II, in both of those fronts, the Geneva Conventions were ignored. And
as they are as being ignored by the United States in things like torture.
Sure, sure.
But this isn't, you know, history is not the past.
That's right. Right, but even in World War II on the Western Front, the Nazis didn't use poison gas in battle, and nobody else did. It was accepted that this, you know, the Geneva Conventions really protect, in some ways, the standards of Western civilization.
Well, it's also
the
worth
standards of Western civilization. That
as much as you can do in a war, which, you know, war itself, you know.
Well, you know, we pretty much came face to face with total warfare and the destructiveness of that, not only to the armies but to everything.
Right,
and we forget how important the Russians were in the Second War. We tend to take all the credit for that, and the Russians, had the Russians not done what they did,
including 40 million people
suffering lots of casualties in the process, it would have been a very different war. And because of the way the Germans attacked on the Eastern Front, the response when the Soviets moved into Germany. I mean, it sounds like we're drifting away from the First World War, but this is all, I mean, there are direct connections. And the basically the atrocities that the Russians perpetrated on the German army, but the German people, have to be traceable at least in part. This is not a justification necessarily, but it is understandable that given what the behavior of the German army in Russia and in getting to Russia, generated some of the response at the end of the war.
You mean the first and the...
I'm talking about the Second War, and I'm talking about, you know, what essentially became the Iron Curtain, and the reasons for that, and a lot of it had to do with ignoring these conventions.
Right, and you bring up the subject of, you know, modern industrialized warfare. You know, again, one of my points in this book is that the Doughboys were the first generation of American soldiers to truly experience modern industrialized warfare. You know, a lot of people talk about the Civil War. The Civil War is the first total war. I don't really buy that. I mean, compared to World War I and what went on in that war in so many different aspects, World War I was a much you know, more of what we think of as a total war. And the experience for those young men who had absolutely nothing to prepare them psychologically, physically, for what they experienced there, it could not help but be transforming.
Well, and you're saying the soldiers, not the officers.
Yes.
Because the officers are still pre-industrial war.
Well, talking about the general officers, the major generals, you know, the others, most of them, I would say, there were some exceptions. There were some who were willing to adapt. But many of them, like Pershing and the others, really were still locked in the past and unwilling to adapt. But the younger officers, lieutenants, captains, majors, colonels, many of them, you know, they were in there with their troops.
That's the difference,
they experienced
isn't it?
The same thing. That's the difference.
The being in the, time and again, you distinguish the officers who are leading their men from the front versus the guys who are sitting in the office saying, "Oh no, attack, attack," having no clue what these people have been through.
Well, you used a word early on that was arrogance, and that word keeps cropping up hither and yon. And I would guess there were tens of thousands, probably more, casualties by virtue of that arrogance, the refusal to learn, the belief that that the American soldier was bigger, brighter, smarter, more effective, that all they had to do was have a good esprit de corps, pardon the French, and they would go, and they would just bowl over all these people, and they'd show how mediocre the British were and how mediocre the French were.
And they said those things.
Oh, sure. And now compare this, though, an interesting comparison. Compare this to how the French and the British and the Germans won into war in 1914. We hear a lot about that, about how arrogant they were and how foolish they were. But they had no way of knowing what this war was going to be about. They had no way of knowing what it was going to be like. In 1917, 1918, Pershing and the others had every way of knowing. They observed the war. They saw what had happened. The British and French told them what it was like.
And
but they wouldn't listen.
36,000 miles of trenches in place.
Right. Well, that's why I said, you know, in my book, I said they had all the arrogance and twice the stupidity of the French in 1914. And that was really the case.
Elan.
Yeah, Elan.
Elan being spirit, and that somehow, and guts, I think is how you say it, translated.
Right. And the comparison to me, having grown up in the South, the Civil War is still very much a part of life.
Sure.
But I found myself regularly reading about these charges, thinking of General Pickett at Gettysburg. Mm. And the difference is that these soldiers, the Union Army, Pickett being a Confederate general, the Union Army did have artillery, but not the kind of artillery the Germans had, and it was front-on artillery. Pickett's army was not essentially surrounded,
right,
which regularly happened with these charges. Secondly, the Union Army did not have machine guns, which was apparently a fairly effective killing machine. And thirdly, they had a stone wall between them and the charging Confederates. But they didn't have 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet of more or less impenetrable barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
Pickett's charge is generally considered, and this is the part I find amazing about these generals. I mean, they had to have studied that. A lot of them were West Point graduates. The logic, Lee sent Pickett there because he had come to believe in the elan of his troops and effectively destroyed his army in the process. I find it just mysterious that people who have been educated West Point could not see what they were doing under these circumstances. And again, I guess it has to go back to arrogance.
Selective memory. It's really, they had, obviously they'd been taught about Pickett's charge, just as they had been taught about what had happened in 1914 and 1916. But they didn't want to remember certain things. They didn't want to think about certain things because they didn't mesh with their overall theory, which is that individual spirit and will is what wins battles.
With a shotgun?
Yeah, I know.
Well, a rifle as your primary weapon in modern warfare?
It's interesting. A first-hand experience of that. First of all, I'd really recommend more people to go and visit these battlefields because they're really much as they were in 1918.
And this specifically would be?
The Meuse-Argonne battlefields, which are near Verdun. If you go there and you see where the Americans fought, you can still trace all the trenches, you can still trace all the pits, everything, the bunkers. The problem is all the trenches, all the pits, all the bunkers are German. The Americans did not dig trenches, and that was partly because they were on the attack, but it's partly also because Pershing and the other commanders ordered them not to dig in. They were not to dig in. They were to be on the attack. So, they would, as it's recounted in this book, very often the attack would stall, and they'd be stuck in one place for several days under heavy artillery bombardment. You look at this. Where are the trenches? Where did they dig in? How did they find protection? They didn't, because they weren't supposed to.
And the thing that I found equally remarkable is they get these bizarre, destructive, horrible orders, and they follow them.
It's the military way, though. I mean, I've always been fascinated by the First War for precisely the reason Paul is saying. British leadership was weak in a lot of cases, French leadership. I mean, the absolute destructiveness of human beings, mm-hmm. starting early on, these frontal assaults. And as you say, the French and the British sort of got over that. But it's still, the death toll in that war was just staggering. I mean, this, you know, it puts a new spin on the notion of cannon fodder.
Right.
And yet, without a lot of exceptions, the French did mutiny. Mm-hmm. The Germans started working their way, at least the German Navy, toward the end. The Russians
had a revolution.
They had a revolution.
But then they had Lenin, and you know, to sort of help them through that. But the willingness of people to follow, I won't say blindly, but to follow orders that are manifestly absurd. It's essentially, you know, time after time, it's a pretty good approximation of suicide. A certain amount of that you have to have in order to have the kind of discipline necessary to fight wars. Nobody right. wants to go out and get killed. Right. But at some point, it seems that there is, you know, at some point, you say enough.
Well, let us say enough so that I don't have to interrupt. When we come back in just a moment with Edward Lengle, his book To Conquer Hell specifically looks at the Meuse-Argonne in 1918 and says more about warfare than I would ever thought possible in one engagement. Please be with us when Bill Russell, Ipola Gordon, Edward Lengle return in a moment.